Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. We're talking about cars and car repair, and we're going to talk to Nate Brecken from Strictly Diesel, who does diesels, and who knows more about diesels than any 10 guys I know. Been in business for a very long time. How long have you been in business?
2005.
Okay, so that's a very long time. That's 12 years? 12 years.
I think
years.
So, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. If my math is good, don't embarrass me this early in the show.
No. Embarrass me. I got to get my shoes off.
Get your calculator on your phone out. That's what I always do.
Yeah.
All righty. This portion is brought to you by S&S Tire Service. They have they opened up in 1976. They have three locations to serve you in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They have the most comprehensive line of tires and so many different brands of the tires. So you can go in. They're going to take a look at your tires. They're going to know the size and the load and the speed rating, so they're going to give you three different brands. So you say to them, I want good, better, best. And so they'll bid all three of them, and it's kind of a price out the door. So if you want to stop by S&S, they'll do stuff that most other guys can't do because of their sheer volume of tires. And they also do alignment and suspension work. So if your old tires have a little bit of wear here, abnormal wear, I should say, or a little abnormal wear here, they can fix that as well. Three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Well, Nate, tell me about Friday.
Friday,
yeah. This last Friday.
Friday was a good day.
What'd you do? Did you have anything special?
Went to the Metallica concert.
Oh, you did you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was talking about work.
Work? Work was good, too.
Okay. Yeah. I had a police department from the northern Arizona part call the other day, and they had a 6.0 Ford. No power at low end. But power comes on at the top end.
Okay.
And no other symptoms. Every once in a while, maybe some white smoke or some black smoke. But other than that, and no check engine lights.
Hmm.
So what do you think?
No check engine lights. That's a kicker.
At least you. If there was a check engine light, you'd have some kind of focus. But I'm guessing, because we had a powwow about this, I'm guessing because the low speed power isn't there, but the high speed power is, it's got a variable vane turbo.
Yes.
And so how often do you find those kind of stuck or not moving?
More and more every day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do you clean them up? Do you take them off?
We take them off if they're that bad. Sure.
Okay.
Inspect them, look them over, clean them.
Okay.
We do an intake service too with a chemical that usually helps that.
Okay.
So
you don't use any of those chemicals that spray into the turbo?
We have in the past, but again, the intake service we do usually takes care of it, so it's not directly into the turbo, but at least it's taking it.
And see, I'm with you.
Yeah.
That mechanic in a can is not necessarily what's going to work.
Dodge is good for that.
Yeah.
Never been pleased with that process, but our intake service works, and if we have to, we take them apart. So,
all right. So I had a guy the other day washing his Duramax.
Oh.
All right, and this is a true story. He's washing his Duramax, and he takes the air cleaner cover off and the air cleaner out. And he washes the inside of the box.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So then he starts it up and doesn't run very well. So he takes it to a shop, and first they want to do the whole motor. And then the second, they want to do all the injectors. And so I'm hired by the insurance company to kind of interpret what they've got.
Yeah.
So he says, Mark, it aspirated water. And what are you thinking when you hear that?
Well, when you say aspirated, if it's a small enough amount.
No big deal.
No
harm,
deal.
No foul.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm saying to him, well, let's think about this. We got air going through the air filter. Okay. From there, where does it go?
Charge air cooler.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
well, it goes turbo and then charge air cooler.
All right.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to the intake.
Yeah.
But it goes to the air cooler or the interchange or whatever you want to call it. Goes first.
Yeah.
That's a big radiator at the front of the thing. So we got a big sump at the bottom of
that
radiator.
Yeah, we do.
So how is that water going to go through this empty radiator and come back out to the turbo? Now,
right.
I noticed on my truck, I have an EGT. When does water boil? You better get this right.
Oh, man.
Get it right.
210?
212.
212.
Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad.
Close.
Okay. I noticed that when I drive my Dodge, I'm 300 degrees within a block and a half.
On the intake?
Yeah, no, on the EGT.
EGT, sure.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
So the exhaust that's coming out of my diesel is already boiling water.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So the turbo's that hot, too. So if we do get water from the airbox through the cooler and then through the turbo, in the cooler, it might come out of the cooler, but I don't believe it does. And if it gets to the turbo is going to be hot, and it's going to turn it to steam.
Steam, yep.
And then it's going to go into the cylinders.
Yep.
Okay? The second thing they said was that it aspirated water, and I was having a tough time with that. And then they said it wiped out, it burnt the tip on all the injectors.
Nah.
Okay, all right. So I say, explain that to me. And he goes, well, the water goes into the cylinder, it causes damage to the tippet of injectors, and that's why it needs all eight. And the bill was like $8,000. And I said, do you have any kind of duty cycle issues? Do you have any scanner data? Do you have anything at all that we can go with? No.
Did they pull the charge air cooler out?
No. So we got water in the air box. We both know it goes to the air charge. And what we're doing there is we're cooling the air off before we send it to the turbo, right?
We'll send it back to the intake, yes.
Back to the intake.
Yes.
Okay. So it's going to go out of the air charge to through the turbo, right? And then it's going to go to the air intake.
Yes.
To the intake, to the motor.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm struggling with all of this, and I'm struggling with this $8,000 bill. But it's really not my call.
Right.
It's the insurance company's call.
Yeah.
And I say to them, why would you insure this? This is kind of self-inflicted.
It is self-inflicted,
okay.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm not telling you the name of the insurance company, but this is what he says to me. Now, this is the big cheese. He goes, we insure stupid. And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
He says, we'll insure the flood damage in your house, but not the pipe. We won't pay to have the pipe fixed, but we'll pay for all the damage.
Right.
And I said, well, having the pipe fixed is peanuts. And he goes, doesn't make any difference. We won't pay to have the pipe fixed, but we'll pay. So I said, if the pipe fix is $150, you don't pay that. But if the floor damage, the baseboard damage, the drywall damage, the algae damage, you pay for all that. He goes, oh, yeah. But he says, just remember this, Mark. We insure stupid.
We pay insurance for a reason, right?
Yeah. So that's a day in my life.
Wow.
That's a day in my life.
Dan is your first caller?
Was it?
Dan?
Okay. So it's just exactly what I live most every day with respect to mechanical issues.
Sure.
And you would be surprised, and the injector tips. When the water gets into the injector tips, what it does is it's kind of like a, what's that water jet?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a water jet machine?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
Folks, a water jet machine is this high-pressure system that takes water, and literally the water is at such high pressure that it will cut a 12-inch piece of aluminum. It'll cover a 12-inch thick pipe, and it does as clean of a cut as you could do with a hacksaw.
Right.
So a water jet is under tremendous pressure. So what's the injector pressure on this Duramax?
Oh, geez, 21,000
at
the tip up there. It's up there.
But a water jet is three times, four times that.
Oh, yeah, easy.
So he says, well, and I said, okay, well, I can understand that water going through the injector might cause problems, but you need to explain to me how the water went in the air box and ended up in the fuel system.
Right.
That's the hard part.
Yeah.
Because we got fuel coming from the tank through the filter assembly, however many there are, and from there goes to the high-pressure pump, and then on the Duramax it goes to the injectors, and it stays there until we open and close the injector electronically. 10-4?
10-4.
So explain to me. The fuel system is a closed system.
Yeah.
So explain to me how the water got from the air side to the fuel side.
Exactly.
This was a struggle. So I wrote my report, and my synopsis was that there is no evidence that this engine took a beating because of the water it aspirated.
Exactly.
it will show up as an uneven idle if we aspirate liquid water, which I don't think we're going to because we're not going to get it past the turbo. If we aspirate liquid water and then we bend rods because they have diesels have big compression ratios.
Yep.
So if we got it, if we bend a rod, then we're going to have a rough idle because we've got pistons that aren't moving in the right direction. And if we don't have the compressor, we won't fire the diesel fuel.
Exactly.
So that was my thing. So anyway, they cleaned it up. They took it out for a ride. Everything was fine. Idled smoothly. And they just paid to have the air box cleaned out and have the air charge taken out and dumped out. And there was no water in it.
Hmm.
So, anyway.
Yeah, it couldn't have been enough.
It could. You're right.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been enough.
Yeah.
Dan, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Morning, Mark. 77.
Sounds like your monitor is on, Mark, somewhere.
Pickup truck. I've had the air conditioner off of it forever. It only had air coming in the vents, but I put it on defrost. It just would go up to the window, wouldn't bother me. Had the dashboard replaced, and sitting still, the vents are doing nothing, but at driving, hot air is coming in all the vents.
Okay, what? It's a 77 watt?
Dodge pickup truck.
Okay. So, when you drive it or turn on the air, have you gone underneath the hood and grabbed that big fat air conditioning aluminum line, and is it good and cold?
I have no air conditioning on it.
Okay, all right. So, we have something. I mean, you said you had everything under the. Did you said you replaced the dash? I'm assuming they replaced the blend door.
I'm hoping they replaced everything, and I asked them, and I told them the problem of always getting air while driving. But it came back, and the air is just super hot. And now if I put it on defrost, it doesn't go up there. It just still comes through all the vents.
One minute.
Hot air.
All right. Well, obviously they didn't do what you asked them to do.
Yeah.
Okay? They didn't do what you paid them to do. And here's what's an important thing that you said to me. You said it used to move around between defrost, center vent, and floor, and now it doesn't.
It's everywhere. Defrost,
okay.
Floor,
all
dash.
Right. So what they did was it could be a vacuum problem. It could be a vacuum line problem that didn't get connected right because your controls open and close that door with vacuum. So there needs to be a vacuum line from the engine that comes through the firewall that goes to the switch, and then the switch goes to the blend door. That's their problem. You need to go back to them and say, look, and I'm not going to spend any more money, but not only did you not fix my problem, but you created something new that I didn't have before. So please, I'm going to give you another opportunity to fix it. How did you pay? A credit card? Cash? Check? What'd you pay?
I paid cash.
Shame on you.
Well, I've been going using the same garage for 13 years.
Okay, well then you need to go back and a smile on your face and be kind about it, and you say fix it. Don't let them put a heater control valve in there, a manual heater control valve, because they may put that in the heater line, which would eliminate hot water underneath the dash. You're getting that hot air from that hot water, and putting a heater control valve would just give you air, but not hot air, but that's not what you want anyway. When you turn the controls off, you don't want any air.
Well, there's none when I'm sitting still. You understand that?
I understand that.
Thank you.
Wait, Nate, what do you think?
Yeah, sounds to me like a blend door or something's not hooked up correctly,
right.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, because, like I said, you've got vacuum coming from the motor. We had one the other day that the vacuum line was at the motor, but we pulled the vacuum line off and the entire nipple was filled with carbon. So vacuum wasn't being applied to that line. So you start the motor up, and all you can do is spray some carb cleaner in there until you can get that carbon out of there. And we did that. We plugged it in. We're done.
77. Could this be a manual door of some kind that's not hooked up?
Well, you're absolutely right, but I'm thinking that it's going to be vacuum operated for the different levels, but
true.
The manual door is going to give you hot or cold.
True.
Okay, open and close. So true. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, Dan, good luck to you, buddy. When we come back, we're going to take your call. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mark Salem and Nate Brecken from Strictly Diesel is here at your service, and especially if you have a diesel problem, then Nate's better than I am, but the two of us together probably can... We can probably hit it 39.5% of the time.
Most likely.
Yeah. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Nate Brecken sitting next to me from Strictly Diesel up in North Phoenix.
Yes.
Where are you guys at?
Yes, we're we just moved, actually. Okay. 2215 West Parkside.
Okay, give me some major cross streets.
It's 23rd Avenue, Pinnacle Peak.
Okay, north of Pinnacle Peak?
No, south.
South of Pinnacle Peak, and then 23rd Avenue, east or west?
East of 23rd Avenue. Yep.
So southeast of the 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. Good, good, good. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a great guy. Family-owned repair shop. Served the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. Doesn't do diesels, but does all kinds of cars and trucks. So whatever you need on a gasoline-powered car, he can handle it. He's got ASC certified technicians. They know how to properly do your car, which is talk to you, diagnose it, repair it, and then make sure their diagnosis fixed the problem you had, which is unlike the caller we just had a minute ago.
Right. Yeah.
So nevertheless, Action Auto Repair is a good guy. His name is Tom, I-17 and Deer Valley Northwest Corner. Patrick, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. I have a 1995 Dodge with a 5.9 coming.
I'm hearing that echo again.
Okay.
And, yeah, I noticed the echo. I have a problem with the fuel shutdown solenoid. Sometimes I go to start it, and it won't start, but if I leave the key on, I go and manually push it up by hand, it'll stay up and let it run.
Okay.
Is that a ground issue, or what?
Well, let me ask you a question. Are you, by chance, on a Bluetooth or something like that?
No, I'm on a cell phone.
Okay. All right. I'm having a tough time with that, Gil. I'm not loading anything I think I'm loading, and I don't hear anything through the studio. But I'll keep looking. Okay, Nate, tell him what's wrong with this truck.
You're picking up on that solenoid to keep it engaged, correct?
Right. I turn it, leave the key on. If the truck won't start, open the hood, grab a hold of it from the bottom, and push it up, and it stays up.
Those solenoids are usually pretty bulletproof, but I know they do take a WD and a cleaning every now and then to help them engage.
Okay.
Not uncommon for us to be replacing those just because of the age of them, for sure.
Okay.
And to have a weak coil, for that matter, too, to pull it up.
Is it a 12-volt magnetic coil?
I believe so, yes.
Can you run an amp draw test on it to see if it's got an amp?
You could do that,
excessive.
Too.
And the only way you could pull that off, Patrick, is have an inductive amp probe. So you're just going to grab the power ground side of the solenoid and grab it and loop it with your inductive amp probe. And I would imagine to apply or unapply, it's going to be 1 or 2 amps. And if it's dirty.
It's a pretty big solenoid.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a relay that controls that, too, once you go to crank. If that relay's sticking or binding, that will cause that, too. But typically, if you can pull up and it holds,
right,
you're probably looking at replacing that solenoid, honestly. And or, like I say, try and lube it, see if that helps it.
Because I was seriously thinking about making it like a choke cable and just do it from the inside of the truck. You know what I mean?
I have seen that done. I have seen it done.
Yeah. Those things, they're like $100.
Yeah, they're not cheap by any means, no. But it depends on what you want to do with the truck. If you want the convenience of that, go for it. If you want the cable, I guess that's what you want to do, too. So,
how much is the relay on it?
All right. I got to go. Thank you.
All right. Good luck. How much is the relay on that?
Oh, the relay's $25-$30 maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, he could clean it first.
Yeah.
And if it made any difference at all, he's on the right track.
Right.
But if it doesn't make any difference, then this, putting on, so now the electricity goes through this relay before it gets used by the solenoid.
Yeah. And I think I may be talking wrong, too, because if the relay is energized and it's giving power to the solenoid and you pull it up and it sticks, the relay's good. So,
okay.
Chances are he's got to try lubing that or replacing it.
But the relay is going to open and close, and it's going to make the solenoid open and close.
Yes.
So he makes it close, but whether it releases or not, the relay has to do that too.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. All righty, Patrick. Thank you very much for that. Ed, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. I got a general question.
Okay.
And the question is, I got a friend. She's got a 2015. I don't know what model or make.
Okay.
She drove through some water, took the car to couldn't start the car, took the car to the dealer. Dealer says it's hydro-locked. She's scared to death that she needs a new engine. What's your general idea or recommendations or something like that?
Well, let me talk out loud in front of Nate here. If
the clock is ticking.
Yeah. But it doesn't have the tolerances anything like a diesel, a gas motor.
No.
That's number one. Number two, almost always when you aspirate water, it's got to get past the air filter.
Right.
So there's going to, but if it's shut off immediately after she went through deep water, there's a great chance that they're going to pull the spark plugs out of this thing, crank it over, pump all the water out, replace the air filter, and it's going to start and run. So I think you got to do that no matter what to get it running. On the other hand, if she aspirated a little bit of water and the engine was knocking pretty good and she went ahead and drove 17 miles home, then there's a good chance
2 minutes.
She's going to need an engine. And so it really just depends. The question I would ask her is from the time that you went through the big old puddle, how long did it die? How long before it died? And if she says virtually immediately, then there is no harm here to pull the spark plugs, crank it over, put a new air filter in it. And I want to tell you, if we can do that, I would say 90% of the engines will live a long life.
Uh-huh.
To evaluate on my comment earlier, the clock is ticking, though, because the water will lock that motor up rust-wise in a heartbeat. So if she did this on our storm the other day,
yep,
Thursday, Friday, why, yeah, you need to get that water out of there ASAP. So.
And you're going to do that when you crank the motor over, and we're going to throw oil up on the cylinder walls, and we're going to have to get the rust out of there. But if she takes it out and puts it in third gear and goes 75 miles an hour, that'll move that rust out of there.
Oh yeah.
But and that rust will cause an oil consumption problem, and she'll know that too. So
yeah. 1 minute.
But I think really and truly, there's no one until they do that, pull the plugs and pull the air filter. There's no one that can tell her she needs a motor.
No. No, you got to pull the plugs first.
Yeah, you got to do your due diligence and then go drive it and see what happens. Thank you very much, Ed. Good luck
to you.
Thank you. You betcha. And tell her to stay out of deep water. Tell her it's a car, not a submarine. Okay? And that's... Hey, I had a Corvette over at a church, and he's showing off. And he's in the parking lot's all full of water, so he's doing donuts out there. Well, the air intake on the Corvette is like 8 inches off the ground. He aspirates a bunch of water, bends every rod, and it's a brand new Corvette. Chevrolet says thanks, but no thanks, and his dad had to pay for it.
Ouch.
So ouch is exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see, 33 minutes, actually 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Nate Brecken from Strictly Diesel, Mark Salem right here at your service. You're welcome to give us a call. And if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we can talk diesels, we can talk gas, we can talk aftermarket performance, we can talk what you should and should not do to your diesel.
Yeah, definitely.
We can talk about people that have brought their diesels to both of us that have abused them.
Oh, yeah.
That have done dummy things. Like drive through the Verde River thinking that it's a submarine.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that.
Or a tank. Yeah, either one. Neither.
So, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. He's the only shop in Mesa that's passed through the filter that we have. He's been around since 1970. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. They have ASE certified technicians, and they can handle all kinds of maintenance and repair and service. And they'll tell you when they're not the best shop for something that you might have. Again, Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street, just east of Stapley. So tell me, can you think of your worst diesel story where they may have, come in and said that their wife was driving it and they don't understand what happened, and then you get in there and find out that somebody's been romping and stomping and the front differential's bowed in half?
The one I'm thinking of is the poor wife in this situation is the gasoline and the diesel.
Oh, that happens every day in my life.
Yeah. And I think that one ended up needing injectors because it was driven till it quit. And they couldn't figure out why it was smoking white.
Yeah.
But check your fuel receipts and, that wasn't diesel. It was unleaded.
Let me tell you a great story.
Yeah.
Alan, my son's done that twice to his diesel. Twice.
Really?
He's put gas in it twice. Now, the second time, he caught it. So we towed him in and pumped. Here's the question. What do you do with what you pumped out?
It gets taken to a special barrel, and one of our chemical guys takes it away.
Yeah. What we've even tried to do is water settles on the bottom, diesel settles on top of it. So we put it in a 55-gallon drum, and we let it settle out. Now, this is water. If it's got a bunch of water, we can suck it out with the straw and usually use it.
Right.
But when you got gasoline, they don't necessarily separate. And if they don't, you have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So this environmental fee is something that people aren't they're not going to welcome.
Right.
But there's a cost associated with us getting rid of this half diesel or this diesel gasoline mix that can't work on either one of these cars.
Yeah.
Can't work on diesel or.
We've had our employees try and run it and obviously lawnmowers and what have you. But the little bit of diesel just messes things up. So
we did the same thing.
Yeah.
We tried to dilute it with gas. So we take a gallon of diesel gas and we put 5 gallons of gas in it. It just didn't work.
No. Diesel's not an additive you want to put in your unleaded, that's for sure. So,
yeah. It doesn't have any combustible under the circumstances we're using in a gas motor. We're not going to consume the diesel.
Right.
By the time it gets into your catalytic converter, you're in big trouble.
Oh yeah.
Now we
yeah.
have a couple of shop trucks with 200,000 miles on them, and that's where we test. That's where we tested the process, and it didn't work.
No.
It just didn't work.
Yeah.
Okay, so how many guys come in and blame it on their wives, whatever the situation is? Do you find that happens a lot?
We hear that, yeah. I'm not going to, 10% maybe, 15%.
We're not going to argue with them.
No.
But when you ask them questions, they don't have all the details.
No, they don't.
And it's because they're covering for their wife, or the wife comes in and says, I did this, and they don't have all the details either. The person who has the details is the person that was there.
Exactly, yeah. I say 10%, but yeah, they do have the details usually, which means that the wife didn't do this. You know?
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Yeah, and they're blaming it on her.
Yeah,
and it's the same way with us. So, what's the big deal right now with Dodges? The guys with new Dodges are obviously not going to be able to make a bunch of modifications to their Dodge when it's under warranty.
Well, that goes across the board, I think, for all three. So,
okay,
yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Until it gets out of warranty. Now, my 2012 has 66,000 miles in it. I'll tell you something. I just changed its first set of tires.
Really?
I really did. Alan put some Toyos, and they're kind of an off season. And I'll tell you something else that really surprised me about everything. I go up and down the mountain a lot to Payson. It got, as the tread went away, it got rougher and rougher to drive.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
And I would say to him, I want you, and I have nitrogen shocks on it and all this fancy crap. And I said, you need to look at this because something's wrong. And he says, well, let's try adjusting the inflation. So we went down 10, we came up 10, up and over 10, so up 20 really. And it didn't make any difference. And I'll tell you how I could really know it. I would drive over the rumble strip in the center of the road. So you're doing 65 miles an hour, which is the speed limit, I might add, wink, wink.
Yes,
so you're doing 65, and you bring it over, and you run over that rumble side, or you go to the right side, and you get the, it just was terrible.
Right.
So he put new tires on it Thursday, and I went up and down the mountain Friday, and it was like driving a brand new truck.
Like a Cadillac.
It was a Cadillac.
Nice.
And I had the same inflation we had done, but for whatever reason, when the tread on it is a half an inch thick, as opposed to being, an eighth of an inch thick, it's just a softer ride.
It is part of your suspension.
And it's a big part, bigger than I ever imagined. Bigger than I ever imagined. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I can tell you this much, though. It is very apparent to me that when they make modifications, that the dealerships are going to figure it out, especially if it's a software modification.
Oh, yeah.
Where we're making romp and stomp and fire-breathing son of a guns, that you run a risk.
Yep.
You run a risk.
Definitely do.
And if you're under some kind of a warranty that gives you 100,000 miles, it's stupid to run that risk.
Yep.
So off the top of your head, real quick, because we're up against a break, the diesel, 5.9, in and out, long block. Just throw a number best you can.
The long block itself, depending on where you get it from, 8,000 to 9,000.
Okay, in and out, though. This is the whole thing.
You're looking 12 to 13.
Bingo, I agree with you.
Yep.
So that's the 5.9. What about the Duramax?
In that same ballpark.
Okay, I'm at 18 or so, 18 or north of that. The 6.7 on the Dodge?
That's up there, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you one, and I'm going to answer it first, okay?
Okay.
The Ford 6.0, okay? Why would you want to put $15,000 to $20,000 in a Ford 6.0 when they are the biggest piece of crap that's ever been built?
Mark, it's a Ford.
I know that. But I feel bad for the people with the Fords.
I do too.
And we try to talk them out of it. Please don't put a motor in this. Get rid of it. Sell it. Whatever. Let's get a junkyard 6.0. There's no guarantee it'll last a month.
No.
But the 6.0 and then the 7.3 in front of it is probably one of the best motors. I heard the other day that the guys with the 7.3 Fords they can sell them for as much as they bought them for in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yes, they can.
17, 18 years ago.
Kelly Blue Book means nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people love those 7.3s. Those are monster motors.
They do.
They went from a 7.3 to a 6.0. Then they went from a 6.0 to a 6.4.
6.4.
And the 6.4 we don't think is much better. And then the 6.7, it's too early to tell, but it looks like they got their poop together.
It's a winner.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's a winner.
All righty, 602, hold on, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I'm Mark Salem. Nate Brecken is sitting next to me. He owns Strictly Diesel. He's up near 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak Road,
yep,
south and east of that. Nick's been in the business for a very long time, and he's actually a guy that we leaned on when we first started doing diesels, and you gave us a lot of help, gave us a lot of advice, and we've always appreciated that.
You bet.
All right, so real quick, before we take a caller, I want to ask you this question. How do you know whether you're driving a car or a truck that you should go through the water in front of you?
That's a great question, Mark. How do you know?
This is what I told my wife.
Okay.
First of all, watch the car in front of you, okay? Watch them.
That's the big one.
If the water is over the center of the wheel, if it's in the middle of the tire, then get the heck out of there.
Yeah.
If it's below that, providing they're not plowing water up over the hood. If the person's going through, you can't look at four-wheel drives.
No.
But if you look at cars, if they're going through real slow and the water's on the bottom half of the wheel, then you're probably going to be okay. She drives a Ford and it leaks air just about everywhere, so I told her.
Poor Fords today.
Yeah, I know. Let's finish up with Fords. Mark, how are you today, buddy? How can we help you today?
Very good. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My son has a 2004 Impala, 140,000 miles. He called me yesterday. The serpentine belt popped off, and he showed me a picture. It looks like the crankshaft pulley has moved out of alignment with the other pulleys.
Okay.
And I've never changed a harmonic balancer.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what skill level it takes, what things someone should watch out for, tools that would be necessary. I'm not sure I want to do it.
On a 1 to 10 scale, it's about an 8 to gain access to it because the radiator's coming out, probably the condenser's in front of the radiator's coming out. Here's the deal. Did the outer shell, you've got the center hub, then you've got a band of rubber around it, then you have what they call the outer shell. Okay? Mm-hmm. Did the outer shell walk off or did the whole armor? What's that?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen it yet. I'm on my way over there now. It's actually a transverse mount of motor, so the radiator's not in play.
Okay, all right. Well, you're still going to have to do something to get that harmonic balancer out of there because you're going to need a puller. So
that's what I thought.
Yeah. So the belts are all off of it. If the shell walked out on you, then that's one thing. That means the crankshaft's probably going to be good. The keyway's probably going to be good. If it sheared the keyway, then sometimes we can dig the keyway out. We can put a new key in there. We can put a sleeve. Well, we're not going to reuse the harmonic balancer. Mm-hmm. So we're going to put a new harmonic balancer in there. They make a sleeve for the back of them when they leak oil. So that's not the case in yours. Yours has come apart. So on a skill level with a transverse motor, I'm going to make this a 7.5 or 8 all the way through from front to back.
Okay, that's pretty high. Okay, thank you, Mark.
You betcha. Thank you very much, Mark. Steve, good morning to you. How can we help you this morning?
Hi, I've got a question for you. I have an old boat with a two-stroke motor, and I sometimes have extra gasoline left over. Can I burn that off of my car without doing any harm to it?
It's a 50 to 1. I bet he's at 50 to 1.
Yeah,
so 50 to 1.
So it's 2.5 gallons, 2.5 ounces per gallon. Mm. And how many gallons are you thinking that you want to dilute and use?
I have like 12 gallons. But I was thinking of just maybe adding a gallon per tank to the car.
How many gallons is a car, you think? 12, 15, 16?
I think it's at least 18, maybe 20. I think it's 18, though.
What kind of car
is it?
BMW 740iL.
Ooh, baby, you just we're shaking our heads no.
Okay.
No, but if he had a 92 Chevrolet Impala,
sure.
That would be something, a gallon for every 10 with no problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That BMW catalytic converter probably costs as much as your boat times 10, times 20. I mean, the risk is way too high with that 740. Besides, the 740 is a rocket ship.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just faster than fast, and the risk is just too high.
I wouldn't take the chance.
Yeah. And so, okay. But you could use it, you know. I mean, do you have any other vehicles, or is that the only one you got?
Yeah, I have other cars. I have older cars, so.
Yeah.
An old lady's Mercedes, I can probably put it in.
And I'm thinking that if you put a gallon of that, which is basically 2.5 ounces of oil, if you put a gallon in that and even 10 gallons, now all of a sudden you've got a dilution factor that can't. And we've got cars that burn more oil than that.
Right.
So
yeah.
So I would think if you could just find an older car, but the BMWs, we're both saying no. All righty?
All right. Well, thank you.
You betcha. Mike, you're up next. Mike, how you doing? What can we do for you?
Hey, Mark. Love your show.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, I have a 1999 F4 250 diesel.
Okay.
7.3. It's got a 325 on it.
Okay.
And I don't drive it much. It mostly sits, which I know diesel's not good sitting, but, you know, it's a weekend driver hauling stuff here and there up to Payson. And I noticed that last week or two, I don't, like I said, I only drive it on the weekend. I get in, start it up, and the engine service light's coming on. And then I'll drive it a mile, and it's turning off.
Okay.
Is it running rough when the light's on, or is it doing any symptom, or is it just throwing a light at you?
Just cranks right over, runs great.
You said it's a 2002?
It's a 1999.
Oh, I'm sorry, 1999. Yes.
Yeah, 7.3. Okay. It's got about 325 on it. It's chipped.
Okay, what kind of chip? Is it the
Banks.
Style Banks? Is that still in the back of the PCM, or is it a programmer?
It's a programmer.
Okay.
So you plug it into the DLC, and it's kind of a typewriter that you plug in?
Yes.
Okay.
I bought it used. I've had it about 8 years now, but, you know, I haven't changed it. It's just set for economy, and I really, you know,
right. That's
really all I need.
Well, the check engine light's coming on for a reason, and typically on a 7.3, that could be for an ICP issue, which is the high side oil pressure.
Okay.
99, not a whole lot going on there that keeps the computer happy. So we could have a like I say, ICP problem. It could be a boost related to the MAP sensor. I have seen a lot of wiring start grounding out on these now to where it'll throw a light for no reason, and you got to find the wire.
It's on a minute or two, and then it turns off, and then, you know, I run it all day. It never comes back on.
Where you live, are you near a desert?
North Phoenix, 40th Street and Cactus.
Okay.
You got any rodent?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard any rodent damage in your neighborhood?
Actually, I have, yes.
Okay, we're not talking about the rodents that chase your daughter. We're talking about the ones that chew up wiring, okay?
Well, yeah. You know, it was funny. My 12-year-old son was up there. We were changing the batteries out, and he noticed some droppings up in the motor.
Okay. Let us think about this out loud. The fact that it comes on, there's a problem.
Yes.
But the fact that it goes off means I've lost sight of that problem.
Correct.
Or it's fixed itself, or it's something that I expect to see in the first minute and a half, and I don't expect to see it after that.
Right.
So really the key here would be is what would the service engine suit light comes on, what is it saying?
Right. We need to figure out what that code is, get it tested somehow, whether you bring it to us or anyone in your neighborhood, you know.
Let's figure out what that code is. So you can only test it while it's on, correct?
No. It should store a code. So even if the light's off, there should be a history there to where it's give us a code to see what's going on.
Yeah, don't disconnect the battery between now and then.
The batteries are new.
Yeah, historically, we should be able to historically go in and look at history to determine what kind of things have happened. ICP, how much? Ballpark.
Depends on the repair, but, you know, $500 to $750, Could okay. go worse than that.
Now, ICP meaning what, Mark?
High pressure oil.
Oh, the oil pressure.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is a three-wire sensor on the driver's side cylinder head near the front that is very common for failure on those.
Okay.
The IPR valve, which controls that ICP pressure, is located on a high pressure pump, which is almost below that.
Yeah, I've heard of those. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I
so,
gotcha.
And right. honestly, even that sensor being oil soaked, which we're used to seeing right now, just because of the age of the sensors, if that sensor's oil soaked, it could be unhappy because it's reading incorrect ICP, and at that point, you know, throwing the light at you. So
you take
and
that,
and it turns off, right? It's
right.
turning off, so it's
and
correcting itself.
Typically, rodent damage won't turn a light off; it usually stays on.
Right.
So
yeah, no.
For what that's worth.
Like this morning, I was listening to your show. Got out, I was running up to the store, cranked it over, and the light was on. And then within a minute or two, it goes off.
Now, if it's oil soaked, could we unplug it and just take some brake clean and clean up that area and plug it back in?
You can do that. It's temporary, but yeah, you can
okay.
definitely do that.
Right. I understand.
For what it's worth, too, 99 is typically out of the window here, but if you've got a glow plug problem, it could be seeing that in the computer and throwing the light that way, too. So, but you're telling me it starts fine, which is typical on a 7.3. They don't normally
yeah,
need
the
all
the light glow comes
plugs.
On. I wait for the light to go off. You know, it tells you to wait a minute or two.
I know, but if you lost one, it's going to see it, but it's not going to affect how you start it.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
okay.
All righty. Well, good luck to you. Thank you very
much.
All
right, Mark.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, correct me if I'm wrong, and I want you to, but the Ford is the only one that uses engine oil to open and close the injectors.
Correct.
So what's happening is we have this high-pressure oil pump.
Huey.
Okay.
That's a system they call it. Yeah.
Okay.
Huey injector.
The Huey injector, and we're going to take engine oil, and we're going to compress the heck out of it, and we're going to send it to a gate at the injector. And then we're going to electronically open the gate, and that high-pressure oil pump is going to open the injector, and we're going to have fuel that's delivered.
That's simply put. You bet.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, that seems to me to be 100,000 milliseconds of time.
It is.
As opposed to the Chevrolet and the Dodge that use electronics, and they've got fuel pressure at the gate.
Yes.
And so we can, if we're going to idle, it's going to open and close this fast. And if it's my Dodge and I'm racing a Ford, then it goes like a fire hose.
Pretty much, right? Yeah, pretty much.
I'll admit this.
2 minutes.
Every once in a while, I'm going up from Rye, okay? And I'm a gray-haired guy.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing 65 miles an hour, which is the speed limit.
Yeah.
And there'll be some young buck that pulls up next to me in a Ford or another Dodge or a Duramax, and they give me this wave like this, okay? Like, see you later, old man. So they throttle up, and I throttle up, and I'm going to be behind them. And there's going to come a time that they're going to run out of power.
Right.
And so then I turn on my left turn signal, and I pull up next to them, and I give them the same wave, and then I pull, and then they know.
Yeah.
And then when you get up on the flats, they'll pass you, but they're looking straight ahead, and their hands are on the wheels. They're not going to give you a
exactly.
thumbs up or
no,
nothing like that.
No, they never do. No.
And so that's the small amount of fun that I have. If you don't wave at me, just leave me the heck alone.
I've had the same fun.
Yeah.
I know that. Yeah. Yeah.
And the other day I was hauling a tractor, and the guy pulls up next to me and gives me a wave. Well, I know I ain't going to chase him down with a 15,000-pound tractor and
no.
trailer. So I just kind of waved at him and stuff like that. But I also have air horns on my Dodge truck. I have triple trumpets off of a Union Pacific locomotive.
Oof.
And the Union Pacific locomotives, they send 110 pounds of air, and I've got a 200-pound compressor underneath my truck.
Good
so
fun.
When I pass by them, I might give them a toot-toot.
Right.
Yeah, and that's about all.
Yeah.
All righty, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We got another hour to go, 30 seconds before this segment's over with, but we're going to be back at about 2 or 3 minutes after the top of the hour. So 2 or 3 minutes, 11-2, 11-3. So we'll take your calls. Again, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We've got 5 lines. I can hear Gil snoring in the background. That means he's sound asleep. So when you ring the phones, it'll wake him up, and you can say, hey, Gil, wake up. I'm Mark Salem. This is Nate. We'll be back right after this.
Chevrolet.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting here next to me is Nate Brecken from Strictly Diesel. Nate does lots of diesel work. As a matter of fact, I don't think you have gas motors inside your shop, do you?
Well, right now I do.
Oh.
We're taking care of service measures trucks, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But normally speaking.
Normally.
Normally speaking, you're not doing that.
We are 100% all the time diesel.
Diesel.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this is not a test. I don't know the answer to this. But what is the oil or the fuel filter change interval on a Duramax, which is on a case I'm working on?
15,000.
And I found that, but yeah. It took me forever to find that.
Really?
The DLC turns the light on at 15,000 if you don't do it and reset the light. But this is a case.
And I run 15,000 on all makes, just across the board, 15,000.
Fuel.
Yeah, fuel filter.
All right. And what about oil changes?
We recommend 5.
Okay.
Across the board.
Okay. Well, are you using a 540 or a 1540?
Depends on the make. The newer ones take the lighter weight oil.
Okay.
But typically it's a 1540.
Okay. Yeah. I found out on my Dodge 6.7 that the light will come on at about 8,500. And I'm using a 540 synthetic. I'm using Chevron, which is Delo, I think it is.
I think so.
Yeah. And I've had some oil analysis tests done, and I don't have... And if I do the 5, if I do the 7, and if I do the 8,500, I'm not having any growth of metal, growth of water, or anything like that.
Right.
But they ask me to run that test on my stuff. Obviously, the Delo, they put it in some of that big equipment that holds 40, 50 gallons of oil and stuff like that.
Yep.
So I like the 15,000 fuel filter. I like that a lot. I got a case right now where the supposedly it had 17 gallons of water in the tank.
Ouch.
Yeah. And supposedly it had to do with the neighborhood kids taking a hose and filling up the tank.
Okay.
And it needed all the injectors.
Okay.
And with Duramax, it's not uncommon for us to do one or twos or three at a time. Not uncommon. The problem is I went and got the tank and poured it into a clear 55-gallon drum and settled it overnight, and it had 8 ounces of water in it.
Oh, wow.
So... we got a problem.
Yeah.
Because 8 ounces. Now, it's also got a warning light and a bowl at the bottom of the fuel filter and a drain.
Right.
So the question is if we would have had 17 gallons of water in the diesel fuel, first of all, it probably wouldn't have run. Because 17 gallons of water in the tank of 30-35 would have overcome the pickup assembly for the fuel pump.
Yep.
Number two, if we got water, that much water in the tank, then that would have certainly turned on the water and fuel light. So that's kind of a warning device.
Yeah.
And then the shop said it needs all the injectors because of the water. But in reality, it was timed out on injectors. So we're seeing that we're doing injectors on 200,000-mile Duramaxes all day long. And have you done the electrical circuit board below the fuel or the fuse panel?
You've told me about that. We haven't seen that yet.
Okay. That's something we've seen regularly, especially when we start moving injectors. So we move 5 to 4 and 4 to 5, and the problem moves with the problem.
Right.
So if that's the case, it's usually an injector. But on my truck, my 2006, we start doing them one at a time. And then we didn't figure it out. Somebody from GM told us, try this. And it's just some ground. Because the ground is shared by all of them. Where the power is not.
Right.
So when we start interrupting the ground because the circuit board's cracked, that's intermittently going to affect one at a time all over the place.
Right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So 5,000 on the oil, 15,000 on the fuel. Any other things? Any other maintenance stops that seem to be good for you guys?
30,000 on trans.
Okay.
Transmission.
Okay.
Transfer case is something that is always forgotten about. So
right.
30,000 on a transfer case.
Okay.
And that's really an inexpensive service when you're dealing with 3 quarts, maybe 4.
Right.
You know. Differentials, 50. Depends on the usage of the truck.
Right. If they're backing a boat into the water, it's probably a little earlier than that.
Yep. I'd do 30 on that too then.
Okay.
But, fluids are cheap. Parts are expensive. So.
That's a good thing.
Better to maintain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Fluid is cheap. Parts are a whole lot more expensive.
Yeah. I will say this on the water separator thing. The factory sensors, in my mind, are a little bit lazy. They don't seem to give you the good enough warning before it gets to the injectors, you know, or the pump for that matter.
Okay.
So even paying attention to a light is tough sometimes because you could be experiencing drivability issues already or you've installed the truck at this point because it's got water.
And you're right.
My two cents there. But
no, you're right.
Yeah.
But here's the two differences in my mind. I'm not arguing with you. But the two differences in my mind, as it sits overnight, water settles and diesel fuel comes up.
Yep.
So we have these two little prongs that sit down in there. So you're going to get a water and the oil light at the very beginning that may go out once we start running fuel through there.
Yep.
And so you won't get and I have told the insurance companies that's what it is. That's what it is. It's a situation where if they're not paying attention, they're late for work, they hop in, and maybe they reach across the steering column, hit the key, walk around, shut the garage door, and get back in.
Right.
They missed the light.
Yep.
They missed the light.
Yep.
So we were talking about the difference between Chevy and Ford and Dodge and that kind of stuff. And I think the biggest difference in my mind is that Ford uses engine oil. When you start pumping engine oil, to what kind of pressure is on the Ford?
Idles typically 5 to 750 PSI, and depending on the motor, you could see as high as 3,500 to 4,000 PSI.
Okay. So we're going to take engine oil, and we're going to compress it to 3,500 or 4,000 PSI.
Yep.
Engine oil does not experience that anywhere else in the world.
Nope.
Nowhere.
Nope.
No car, no tranny, no differential, no nothing. The only one is Ford.
Yep.
And so this is what I heard. I heard that initially when they came out with the Ford, it was the 10-quart system on the 6.0. It was a 10-quart. And then they figured out that the oil was wearing out so fast that they had to put a 14-quart pan on it, or they made a change.
That may have been the 7.3 that started out like that.
Is that right?
They made the pan deeper.
Right.
Because obviously the air bubbles in the oil, if they get picked up in the pickup tube, affects performance.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a 7.3,
yeah,
but it carried into the 6.0s, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So then Ford had to make this modification to it to get the truck through a regular oil change interval, because up until that point, it wouldn't even make 3,000, I'm told.
Right.
Because once we compress the oil, we lose a lot of the capabilities of the oil. Because in a normal gasoline motor, that same oil might see 50 or 60 pounds of pressure.
Exactly.
And you're talking 3,500 to 4,000 pounds of pressure.
Yep.
So we're going to take and compress the oil at 50 PSI. And 50 PSI is hardly more than a light truck tire, right?
Right, exactly.
So, but when we're at 3,500 to 4,000 pounds, we're talking about the hydraulic transmission in my full-size tractor.
Yeah.
And the Fords.
The power stroke was the reason a lot of our oil additives changed in that area to help with the foaming, to help with lubrication, to help with the pressure that they were experiencing, because the additive pack was leaving quite quickly.
And so when we're going to use this oil to open and close the injectors, we're going to use an electronic signal to open and close the gate. It seems to me that when we're talking about milliseconds of time, 1/1,000,000th of a second, it seems to me that Ford's idea of opening and closing that injector with pressure, oil pressure, and electronics is going to be a lot longer than the Duramax and the Dodge. When we have, here's the picture I want to draw for people. There's 20 people at the door of the classroom. Okay?
Right.
To open and close the door, we're just going to hit an electronic button, and the door's going to swing open in a very blink of an eye or less.
Right.
And then many kids can get through that door as possible.
Right.
Then the door's going to slam. Okay?
And the people are fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much fuel do you want to get out the injectors?
Exactly.
So how many people do you want to get through the door?
Okay, fair enough.
Yep.
So then we have Ford's way, and we're going to build up oil pressure, and then we're going to send the oil pressure to the gate, and then we're going to electronically open the gate and close the gate. Well, it's going to, instead of it opening immediately, wham, it's going to have to build that oil pressure, and then it's going to kind of open slowly, and then wham. So there's going to be some kind of a delay there.
There's a millisecond or two,
right.
Yep. Yep.
So that kind of bothered me. Do you know what a millimeter is?
Holding my fingers up.
Okay.
It's a small amount.
Right.
For sure. Yeah.
I found out the other day, and I didn't know this. It's 1/1,000,000th of a meter. So a meter's 39 inches. So I then began to cross over a millimeter. And a hair, human hair, is 2/1,000ths.
Right.
Okay? So it isn't even 1 millimeter. It's like 0.3 millimeters. So, and the reason why I know a human hair is 2 to 3 thousandths is I use that when I talk to people about their cars.
Sure.
At the tolerances that we want to deal with is the thickness of a human hair.
Sure.
Not a red one, but a blonde one or a black one. So it's just a difference in what those are all about. So, I never knew a 10-millimeter socket. I think it's 10. It can't be 10 millionths
no.
of a meter. So I don't understand that difference. Or maybe it's 10 thousandths of a meter, and they just call it a 10. Because 10,000 wouldn't fit on the socket if they had
exactly.
the socket.
Yeah.
So yeah. it wouldn't fit. So anyway, yeah, it's interesting with all the electronics. But people ask me all the time, and I'm going to ask you, when they first came out, in the 1990s, mid-90s, we got computerized cars, we got oxygen sensors, we got fuel injectors, we got gasoline motors that were fuel injected and stuff like that. Compared to then and now, how comfortable are we?
Comfortable as far as?
With our diagnostic skills. Are we still afraid of electronics, of computers, of inputs and outputs?
Not like we used to be.
Not like we used to be.
No, definitely not.
So on a 1 to 10 scale, back then we were at, our education level was a 9, a 10, or an 11 on a 1 to 10 scale. It was
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
Today, I think our understanding of what's going on is a 2 or a 3. I really think we have it down.
Exactly.
We understand the difference when you have... I tell people this is how simple it is. Do you have a knock sensor on a diesel?
1 minute.
Not yet.
Okay.
I don't.
Because I don't know that we do either.
I don't think we do.
All right, no. A gasoline motor.
Yes.
All right, I want to test the knock sensor. How would you test it?
Power brake, maybe?
Well, it's even easier than that. You plug in your scanner,
well.
And you go to the knock sensor. Now, don't matter where you take a hammer and hit that motor, the knock sensor is going to go from no to yes.
That's true. Yeah, it's that
so
easy.
You take this ball peen hammer and you hit the alternator bracket and the sensor better. The other day we had a car come in that had a knock sensor code. It's like all the time. So we looked at the O2 sensor or the knock sensor and it was pretty much reporting a knock all the time. It had a broken power steering bracket.
No kidding.
Yeah, and the vibration of the bracket on the engine, the knock sensor was understanding that as a knock, a pre-ignition.
Right.
And so it as this thing flapped, through the grace of God, the technician heard this and put a bar behind it and just kind of pulled on it to separate it, and the knock sensor said, oh, it just went away.
Yeah.
So,
the car ran normally.
Yeah, that was like a $2,000 diagnostic fee.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
just teasing.
I know. I know.
All righty, 602-508-0960. If you want to talk about cars, now's your chance. There's nobody on the line, so you're more than welcome to do that. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate Brecken and Mark Salem here at your service. If you have a question on any kind of car repair, gas, diesel, tires, oils, any kind of wives' tale that you want to ask us about, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've probably got between the two of us 50 years of experience, so we'll certainly give you our opinion. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong, but most of the times we're right. Under the Hood, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by IMM Auto Service in Tempe, northeast corner, just south of the 202, just west of the 101. Been around since 1972. David, who owns IMM Auto Service, is a friend of mine. He's a friend of mine because he has an ASE Mastertex, which I believe in, but more important, he deals with Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. Those cars strike fear in the strongest, biggest, hairy-chested guy you've ever seen in your life because those cars are not made like any other car in the world. So, but here's the good news. IMM can handle your Toyota, your Chevy, your Ford, your Chrysler, your Honda, as well as those cars that like Volvo, Saab, Alfa Romeo, and Fiat. So if you have one of those cars in your driveway, and you also have a Toyota, they can take both of them. But if you've got a problem with your Saab where every time you open the door, the windshield wipers flap, David at IMM is going to be able to handle that for you. I promise you. He's seen that before. Let's go to the phones. George, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, yes. I really enjoyed your last thing about knock sensors. At 30,000 miles back or so on the Nissan,
Uh-huh.
I was occasionally, when I'd get a load of bad gas somehow or other, would hear a ping or a knock. You know, but you learn to hear over the years.
Yeah.
And so we took and put not a $15,000 code reader like you have, but anyway, we put a code reader on it, and it said faulty, knock sensor.
Okay.
So we replaced it underneath the valley and everything else, and a couple of days of hard work for shade tree mechanics there. And then it didn't do that again for quite some time until, just recently. And occasionally, with a load of less than perfect gasoline, I'll hear a knock or a ping, as you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, how do we tell that the knock sensor is failing?
Okay. Well, the good news is we know that you diagnosed it right the first time, or the light would have come right back on. And so,
I never saw a light.
Okay, or the code would have come back.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so the fact that the code didn't come back, you got it that time. It's entirely possible. What year is the Nissan?
2003.
Okay, so it's 14 years old. It's entirely possible that that knock sensor's been updated 10 times, 3 times, 1 time.
Interesting.
So that could be it. But to test the knock sensor, you do just exactly what I said. Now, there's a difference in a code reader and a scanner. The code reader just reads the code, but the scanner, with a good guy operating the scanner, and the code reader is $29.95, and our scanners are $8,000 to $12,000. So there's a big difference. But with the scanner, you can go in and talk to the engine. You can see what's going on. Because once you get the code, you still got to find the state, the street, the city, and the number. And the code reader just tells you the problem's in the United States. It doesn't even tell you the state. But in your particular case, I would probably plug in a scanner, and I would start on the driver's side of the car, and I'd tap the exhaust, and then I'd tap the front of it, and I would see where it is that I could, it may or may not be, it would be different. So maybe
you can make a signal.
Yeah. So if I hit 3 places and I don't get the signal and I hit 1 and it says knock, then I'm going to look in that area. But let me ask you a question. Why can't we retard the timing a degree or two?
I don't know.
Okay.
Never been that far into it.
All right. I think that's what you should look at. I think you should find out if it's adjustable, and if it's adjustable, I want you to retard it 2 degrees, and that may very well take care of your problem.
Right.
So
either that or, really it's just to back off with your right foot on the gas pedal and go to a lower gear and hope for a better tank of gas next time.
Okay, well, if it is truly a fuel-related problem, then if you were to fill it up with premium for 3 or 4 tankfuls, then the light would go off, because the difference between regular gas and premium gas is this. The regular gas explosion is like a balloon that I pop with a pin. Are you with me? All right.
Right.
Now, when you take the balloon and you squeeze the little mouthpiece on it, okay, and then you let it go, the balloon goes... Okay, it just deflates longer. So the explosion for regular is the blink of an eye. The explosion for super is this. One, in an exaggerated way. One ignites two ignites 2,000, 2,000 ignites 2,000,000. So the burn is longer. So I think you should use 3 tanks of super, and if the problem goes away and it doesn't return, then it's not a broken power steering bracket. We need to retard the timing. That's what I think.
Yep.
All righty.
Well, anyway, sounds good to me. Thank you very much.
Good luck, George. Thank you very much.
Greg is your next caller.
Greg, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hi. I have an O2 Excursion with a 7.3.
Okay.
And I wanted to get your opinion on preventative maintenance versus, don't fix it if it's not broke. I have almost 200,000 miles.
Okay.
And I have the original injectors, transmission, glow plugs, and electric fuel pump.
All right. Now, I'm going to put you on hold for a minute, and I'm holding you just for a minute because I got to get some business done.
Sure.
All right. When we talk about car repair shops, I need to talk about Larry Harker's.
Yep.
Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And between you and me, nobody else, he's one of the best diagnosticians for gasoline motors I've ever seen. You just go in and wave the red flag in front of him. You say to him, nobody in town can fix this, and I don't think anybody in the Western United States can fix this, and that's what it gets to just stick a road flare in his back pocket. He is just, and his name's not Larry, it's Bob, and his wife Ellen runs the front. But they're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. They've been around since 1967. Bob is just a great diagnostician, and Ellen runs the shop in a very nice way. So if you're in that area, 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's is a place I would do, I would use. On the other hand, if you've got one of those cars that nobody in town can fix, go over there and throw the gauntlet in front of Bob. Just tell him, nobody can fix this. I heard you might be able to, but I doubt you can fix it too. And that's kind of like waving the red flag in front of the bull. So real quick, we're gonna take care of Greg here and then on the other side of the break.
Yes.
But I'm going to ask you the questions. Injectors, 200,000 miles, what does he do?
They're getting tired, but there are some maintenance things you can do with them.
Okay, flush them? Clean them?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
So is that an additive you put in the tank, or is that an additive that you put in the fuel system, or how do you do that?
That's an additive that can go in a tank. We also have a tool to run through the injectors with, so that becomes the fuel tank.
Okay.
And then there is oil additives and flushes that we can do with the oil side, too. We have an injector that's oil, fuel, and electric.
Okay, good enough. All right, and then the second question, he said transmission. Now, he didn't say it was acting up. He said 200,000 transmission. You know what that tells me? That car's been on the highway a lot. It's been locked up in high gear, and it ain't been shifting a lot. This hasn't been a taxi cab at 200,000 miles.
Didn't appear to be, no.
Right. And so would you change it at 200,000 miles, or would you wait till symptoms?
No, believe it or not, I would.
You would change it?
I would. I would change the filter. I would flush it. I would, take care of it.
But you're not going to change the transmission.
No.
At this point, you're going to just service it.
Correct.
Okay. So he had glow plugs. He had the transmission. Do you remember anything else he had that we can finish in 45 seconds?
Original glow plugs, but yeah, that doesn't scare me. That's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
Okay.
So.
And glow plugs are kind of like a light bulb, on and off. Okay. Hold your thought. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem and Nate Brecken right here from Strictly Diesel, 23rd Avenue and Pinnacle Peak, South and East.
Yep.
So if you're up there in North Phoenix, and you know what? You've got that north area covered. In my opinion, you've got West Scottsdale, Cave Creek, and the whole north area from actually the 202 North. I don't know anybody in that area that I would send somebody to other than you. There's probably guys out there in that area, but I just been around you a lot more than I've been around them.
Appreciate that, Mark.
Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 in Bell, Northeast Corner, Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner. I've known Kurt and his wife, and I know Eric and Jeff. They're two major ASE Master technicians. It's a great place. So I-17 in Bell, anywhere you live in that area, and if you have a good shop, that's fine. Stay there. But if you're looking for a good shop, this is what you do. Take it in for an oil change and see how they treat you. And if you like how they treat you, then I would probably do business with them. On the other hand, if they try to sell you everything, including the kitchen sink, I'd keep looking. But you're not going to have to worry about that at Kurtz because he's a good guy. Okay, let's go to the phone. Greg, we covered transmission, we covered injectors, and glow plugs. Did you have another one?
Yeah, on the injectors, you're saying there's a servicing that can be done with fluid to clean it out, but there's also a mechanical tool that can be used.
Well, the mechanical tool is at least our shop has a flush tool that we put an additive in or a chemical that is basically the vehicle runs solely off this bottle at that point. So we run that through the fuel system portion, and that's where the flush happens on the fuel side of the injector.
If they run the fluid, the cleaning fluid through the injectors, and the buzz test sounds good, and it starts really good, do they also need to do the mechanical tool to clean it out?
Not necessarily, no. No, it's a recommended maintenance. It doesn't have to be done, but we do recommend it from time to time. So,
And it could be like a diagnostic, right? Otherwise, they've got an engine miss, and you say, let's flush the fuel injectors to see if we make it better, worse, or the same.
Exactly.
So it's a diagnostic tool as well.
Sure.
We often do that for gas motors.
Sure.
And so we'll say, this will help us understand whether this is related or not.
And if you don't have a misfire and they buzz nice, well, then, yeah, you may not need the service. So.
Okay. The glow plugs, don't change them unless they just stop functioning?
O2, you should... 2002, you should get a check engine light if those start having an issue. So, yeah, if you're not seeing the light and it's starting normally, I would leave those alone.
Okay. And transmission, I do have an auxiliary filter on that that I've added.
Okay, that's awesome.
And you were saying to change the transmission at 200 or keep going with that?
No. Well, obviously, whatever makes you comfortable, but I would service it, not replace it. I would service it. I would make sure the fluid's in good shape. I would change that filter that you added. You know, obviously the filter inside the pan is not lifetime. I would also change that too.
Yep.
We do offer a flush from our shop. Believe it or not, the truck does the work, not the flush tool. So yep. A lot of people are scared by flush machines, but that always does a great job and keeps your truck on the road.
Let me tell you what we do. We've got our customers on a two-stage kind of transmission service. The transmission is going to shed a lot of metal and polish everything in the first 50,000 miles.
Yep.
So I want to pull the pan. I want to look to see what kind of snap rings are in there, which is a bad idea.
Right.
I want to see what kind of metal and clutch material, but we're skilled enough to say this is normal.
Yeah.
So you do the 4 quarts, 5 quarts, 6 quarts, plus the pan gasket and the filter.
Two minutes.
At another 50,000 at the 100K, I want to flush it. I'm not concerned about the internal filter, and neither should he, because he has two. He has the internal filter and an external filter.
Right.
So we vacillate back and forth between pan and filter and flush, back and forth, back and forth.
Yep.
The old idea about if you put new transmission or new fluid in an old transmission, it's going to cause it to fail. That's not true. It was in the 60s and the 70s when they were high detergent oils, and people never changed it anyway.
Right.
So you got this black tar in there, and you put brand new fluid in it, a tranny fluid, and it washes everything clean and plugs up all the valve body, and all of a sudden it doesn't work. So those are the issues. So that's kind of how we do it. It sounds like you do something similar to that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And let me ask you a question. We looked at this. You're only doing 13,000 miles a year, Greg. Is this something like you're going to Pine Top, or you've got a girlfriend in Flagstaff or anything like that?
No, I'm actually in Communist California, but I got the thing in 2005 with 120,000 miles on it. So I think a salesman owned it and drove 30-something thousand miles a year all on the highway.
Okay.
So I bought it then, and then it's been a super maintenance project for me. Another one's the electric fuel pump is original down on the frame rail.
Unless you hear that making noise, leave it alone. Those Bosch fuel pumps are almost bulletproof.
And they're cooled and lubricated by the diesel fuel that comes through them.
Yep.
So that's a really great thing because the diesel fuel never gets hot, so it's constantly bathed by a cold lubricant, and that's as good as you can get. But the gasoline ones that sit in the tank are just like that. They're cooled and lubricated by the gasoline that they're bathed in. So
strictlydiesel.com, visit our website. We've got some good fuel upgrades for that truck. But,
I got the ITP years ago.
Okay, awesome. So you know Dennis,
good. I got a bunch of that stuff. I got all kinds of upgrades without
Perfect.
Going to hot injectors and chips because I don't want to destroy it. And my final question would be back to the Huey system and how hard it is on the oil. I've got a bypass oil filter, that filtration solution, and
yep.
I do the drain of the high-pressure oil pump reservoir. Sometimes I used to do it at every oil change. Is it worth it to also consider using synthetic oil if you're going to change it out at 4,000 to 6,000 miles? Is there anything else you can do?
Synthetic oil is always recommended in my mind at this point. Yeah, a lot of people worry about switching at that kind of mileage. My kids drive a 7.3 truck, and one of those is running synthetic, so I don't worry about it. It can only help, in my mind. It can only help.
And I'll tell you, I'm an oil expert for Valvoline. And it's important to understand that conventional oil, typically in a gasoline application, is 5,000 to 7,000 change. Semi-synthetic is 7,000. Well, actually, 3 to 5 is conventional. 5 to 7.5 is the semi-synthetic. And then 7.5 all the way to 12 and sometimes 14, That's a synthetic. The synthetic turns to a tar at 500 degrees, and the other two turn to a tar between 350 and 400. So the synthetic has higher heat tolerance. The synthetic also flows out of the can or out of your engine at 60 below zero, and the other two don't have a chance in doing that. But then again, Arizona is not likely to run across 60 below. Here's the problem. It has nothing to do with the additive package. It actually does have to do with the additive package. The oil can look fine, and the oil can be lubricating fine, but you've lost the anti-foam capabilities. You've lost the detergents, and the detergent doesn't scrub bubbles. It's not scrubbing bubbles. What the detergent is it holds the dirt in suspension, which diesels make a lot of that, carbon and dirt. And it holds it in suspension so the next time that gulp of oil goes through your filters, and you had two, then your filters are going to grab that piece of trash out of there. So a non-detergent oil that we use in our lawnmowers that don't have a filter, all the trash falls to the bottom of the crankcase and stays there. It's not held in suspension because there is no fuel or no oil pump. So in that case, I agree with you. I like the idea of a synthetic. The 540 is a synthetic, and that's the oil that I use in all my diesels. I go a little longer than you do. I go to 75, 8500, but I have the ability to have it tested that you don't. And you got a lot of engines out there that are going to create a lot more water. They're going to have blow-by. They're going to have some fuel contamination. And I'm just lucky enough to not have to deal with that yet. All righty. Thank you very much for your call. We got open line 602-508-0960, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. All right. We got a problem, Houston.
A small one.
A small problem.
Literally small.
Small one. Okay. Yeah. There's been quite a few callers to the radio station that said I misrepresented a millimeter earlier in the show. Okay? I don't think I did, but I want to tell you something. I'm not going to go back through the tape and see what the heck I said because it really doesn't make any difference. Let me tell you what I meant to say. A millimeter is 1/1,000,000th of a meter, and a meter is 39 inches and some change long. So the proper thing would be, if I said it's 1/1,000,000th of an inch, which I don't think I did, but I might have. And if I did, I'm sorry to all you engineers that called in. You know what an engineer is?
What's an engineer?
It's a guy that drives a locomotive.
Oh, no.
So I'm sorry, but I meant 1/1,000,000th of a meter, and then I'm saying to people, a meter's 39 inches long. Okay. Do you think we'll get any calls from engineers?
You might get an email.
Do you think I care? Engineers, they drive me crazy. They just, I like them. Person to person, I like them.
Yeah.
They just drive me crazy. I was up in Payson the other day, and one guy is complaining to the owner of a quad shop that he, after they did the alignment, he had to do it over again. This guy probably weighs 280. And he's in a side-by-side.
Yeah.
So his buddy's an engineer. He announces it to the whole place, and he starts telling the shop owner, and I can't stand it. So I say to him, excuse me, did you align it with him in it? And he goes, no. And I said, well, you have to. Look at the size of this guy.
Yeah.
So when you put him in the driver's seat, it throws the entire geometry out. So if he's the driver, you need to align it with his butt in it.
Right.
So we can get caster, camber, and toe correctly. Because as soon as he sits in it, the camber is going to collapse. The top of the tires are going to come in because this guy weighs just shy of a Volkswagen.
Right.
So he goes, oh, that's not true. And I said, okay. I've done more alignments in my life than you've done in the last 25 years. You know, no matter what, you can't match me for alignments. Anyway, I know I'm going to get a lot of calls from the engineers, but I'm doing it tongue in cheek.
Jeff, is your next caller?
I just don't want you to marry my daughter. Automatic Transmission Exchange is over on 40th Street in Washington. He's been there since 1968. Phil, he's been there for such a long time that no matter who goes up and down Washington, when I say 40th Street in Washington, you're going to look and you're going to see and you're going to know he's been there a very long time. So he doesn't change parts and he doesn't quote everything as a transmission. He's better than that. So if you need somebody to drive your car and you can create the symptoms, maybe it's a vibration, maybe it's shifting too early or shifting too late, maybe it doesn't go into overdrive, that's what they'll do for you for nothing. So you call them up and say, can I stop by at 3 o'clock this afternoon and I can demonstrate the problem when you take a ride with me. That's what Phil's all about. Automatic Transmission Exchange, around since 1968. 68. And who was the caller?
Jeff.
Jeff, good morning to you. If you're going to chew on my backside about the millimeter, I want to apologize one more time.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I've got a 2004 diesel. It's got 550,000 miles on it. And I'm wondering if it's just finally going to die on me or if it's something that you can figure out. When I'm driving, I also lose the pedal. I'll be going 60 on the freeway or whatever, and I get nothing.
Okay.
And it'll be to the point where I'll have to start pulling over. But every time before I pull all the way over, it kicks back in and I take off.
Okay. Now, you didn't tell me what brand it is, but, Nate, I bet it ain't a Ford at 550,000 miles.
Oh, come
miles.
On.
All right, I'm just guessing.
It's a Dodge.
Okay, see? There we go.
I knew it.
I knew it. I used to be a mind reader at the circus. I was a mind reader. What do you think?
Loses the pedal.
I think it's throttled by wire.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I think he's lost one of the two sensors.
Yeah.
So
I took it in to one of your shops.
Okay.
And they changed the throttle body. And okay. It stopped it for about 2 weeks. And then it started doing it again, and then it got to the point where it was doing it a lot. So then I brought it back to them. They did it again at no charge.
Okay.
And it lasted again for about 2 to 3 weeks. Started doing it again. I left it at the shop for probably 2 or 3 weeks, and they couldn't figure it out because they said it doesn't happen. It happened to them.
Okay,
I understand. But it doesn't keep doing it.
Okay, well, that happens in my industry all the time.
Yeah.
It's time for them to punt. It's time for them to say, we can't handle this. But both of us are looking at, Nate and I are looking at one another, and here's the deal. I would first look to see if you have a throttle cable that goes from the accelerator pedal to the throttle blades, okay? Or the pump in the portion of a Dodge. What?
Oh, it's going to go to the TP sensor, basically, on that truck. It's going to go to that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So if you have a cable, then I'm wrong. But if you don't have a cable, then we have two sensors. And the two sensors are at the throttle, and the two sensors are at the throttle position sensor. So your foot throttle electronically opens up the RPM. Well, here's the deal. Those sensors have to be completely synchronized. And, for instance, one of them goes from 1 to 5, and the other one goes from 5 to 1. I'm just making this up, but it's true. So when you throttle up, let's say, 25%, the one that goes from 1 to 5 is going to be about 2, but the one that starts at 5 and comes down is going to be at about 3, but the computer can decipher all of that. When those two get out of whack, it takes your throttle away from you. So you no longer have a throttle. It's because it's throttled by wire, and they think something's wrong and the throttle could be wide open and we're going to take the throttle away from you. The computer is going to manually activate the throttle blades on a gasoline motor. It's going to manually activate that with an electric motor. So the computer controls the electric motor that controls the throttle blades. But the computer is constantly looking at the two sensors on the throttle and two sensors on the throttle blades, and those have to be synchronized. So it's time to get a fresh eye. Go.
I've got a comment, too. You may want to ask the shop if they've looked at the connectors to these sensors that they've replaced. Seen an awful lot of loose pins, worn out wiring, even bare wire for that matter, at the sensor. So if there's any question of the connector, you may want to see if they've done any wiring repairs. Also, for that model year Dodge, we have seen quite a few ECM issues with intermittent weird complaints,
right.
Throttle being one of them. So there's a couple things that could be going on with the truck still for sure.
You know what we do on the connectors? We bend the connector away and we tape it to something else, so we're putting different pressures on the pins,
right.
So if you tape it away, instead of it coming straight into the connector, we're going to pull it over and we're going to U-shape it,
yep.
Tape it up, so if the problem goes away, we've diagnosed it,
right.
So that's like $1,000 right there,
yep.
So and so after, now you leave it alone and you untape it, and then Jeff says problem back,
right?
We're there,
yep.
We're done. We're
yep.
there. So I think it's time for you to have a heart-to-heart conversation with them, and I think it's time for you to say, I need a fresh pair of eyes, and so I would like to tell you that if I get this fixed and it has nothing to do with the throttle body, then I'd like to come back to you and we can decide what we're going to do about the misdiagnosis and what we can do about that makes you feel good and me feel good, and that's how I'd handle it. That's how I would hope my customer handled it, instead of walking in and start yelling and using bad words like my wife does, and create all kinds of problems in the lobby.
Well, the shop's been great as far as taking care of it, or at least trying to find it.
I understand.
And then I've got one more question.
Okay.
So it's not concerning that vehicle, but I have three other vehicles that have the same problem.
Okay.
I have a 2003 Dodge diesel with just over 100,000.
Okay.
I've got a 2005 Dodge diesel with just over 350,000.
Okay.
And another 2005 with 380,000.
Okay.
And all three of them, air works great for the driver. Sucks for the cost, for the passenger.
Low. You got low freon level.
I just had one service, too.
Okay.
It came back that way.
Okay. Well, compressors on these Dodges, the higher miles they get, the worse off they are. Whether it's the compressor or somewhere in that AC system, if you have uneven register temps on your Dodge, you have low freon level.
And here's what, when they serviced it, the new technology is the electronic dipstick machines. So we suck out all your freon, and it has 20 ounces. We clean it up, remove the water and the metal. Then we look at the tag, and it's supposed to have 28 ounces. So we put your 20 back in, and we add 8 to it, and now the dipstick shows right on the full mark. We've never had that equipment before. So that's pretty expensive as well. Now, the service at my facility is $125 plus the adjustment on the freon. So in his particular case, he'd pay for 8 ounces of freon, and he'd pay $125. The $125 includes all the labor, sucking and cleaning it up and pushing it back in and measuring it and all that other kind of stuff, because it's an hour's worth of work.
Yep.
So if he just hung his gauges off the hood, he looked at the gauges and he added or subtracted freon, that is like Fred Flintstone used to do it and Mark Salem used to do it. But today we just have far more sophisticated equipment, and that's something I would do, because I agree with Nate. The possibility exists that you have a freon level problem, and the first thing we got to do is get the freon level perfect, and then after that we can decide if there's a problem. Thank you very much, Jeff. Thank you very much. I got to talk about Air Park Auto. Air Park Auto is up at Scottsdale, actually on Hayden and Raintree, which is just south of Frank Lloyd Wright or Bell Road. Nadine owns Air Park Auto. Nadine and Stacy were married, and they grew up with Renee and I with respect to growing up and building your auto repair shop. So we both went through that at about the same time, and it was difficult because both of us were young. But Stacy passed away, and Nadine's running the shop. There should be some comfort for ladies, because she's going to be the one that makes some decisions. And, of course, she's looking at it from a female perspective. Likewise, at my shop, my daughter Andy and my wife Renee are decision makers, and I am when they let me. But the idea is that Air Park Auto has been around a very long time. They do a very good job. Nadine is a very fair person, and she will oftentimes lean on other experts to help her out. So I fielded one or two of her calls over the years, but it's not like she gets complaints every day of her life, and it's not like I talk to her once a year. So it's a good place to go, Air Park Auto. Nate, thanks very much for spending your Saturday with me.
Thank you, Mark.
I appreciate it. And for those of you, Nate is at Strictly Diesel, and that's 23rd Avenue in Pinnacle Peak, just south and just east.
1 minute.
And he's in a brand new shop.
We are a brand new shop.
And and so they have a lot of new equipment and hoists, and they do lots of maintenance all the way from engine replacements to performance to no start and all the maintenance associated with diesels.
You name it.
And you name it, and Nate can take care of it. So, and he specializes in all of them, the Duramax, the Dodge, and the Ford. What is the relation? What's the percentage of the Ford versus the other two?
Every week's different.
Give me the straight answer.
Serious. Every week's different.
Okay.
This week we're heavy on Dodges.
Okay. Okay. Last year. Last year.
I'd have to run some numbers. I don't know. I'm perfectly honest.
You're a politician. I want to tell you something. We've made millions on that 6-liter.
Yeah.
I mean to tell you. And I imagine you did too. Ford's better with the 6.4, a little bit better. The 6.7, it looks like a home run.
Yeah.
But the 6-liter, it was just an opportunity to make a lot of money. We'll see you next week.